Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hello and welcome to A Musical Journey Like No Other, giving you an in-depth, invigorating, and exclusive look at the newest Smashing Pumpkins album, Autumn. This is 33, Episode 4, Chapter 4, the fourth step on this interstellar musical expedition. If this is your first time listening to 33, welcome. If you've been with us since the very beginning, thanks for being fans and thanks for tuning in. On this episode, like every episode of 33, we're going to have a world premiere of a song from the album Autumn. This time, the song is titled Embracer. As always, we're going to break down that song with Smashing Pumpkins frontman Billy Corgan. We're going to go in-depth into the story, the lyrics, the melody, the connections to past albums, and the connections to the world we all share. We're also going to be giving you exclusive insights into previous hits, B-sides, fan-favorite tracks from the Billy Corgan catalog. On this episode, we're listening to and analyzing the debut single from the Smashing Pumpkins, a 1990 release, I Am One. You can hear the re-recorded version of that song on the album Gish, released in 1992. We'll have more details on that a little later. Our guest today on this episode of 33 is Billboard chart-topping musician, singer, and songwriter Youngblood. His self-titled album is out now. You can also hear Youngblood. He is scheduled to perform this Saturday at the Aftershock Music Festival in Sacramento. Youngblood's going to be joining us in a few minutes. I'm Joe Galley, one of your hosts for 33. As always, joining us on this journey is my friend and broadcast partner, Kyle Davis.
Thank you, Joe. And thank you for everybody that's tuning in, listening to this, and giving the support, sharing, rating, review in all the places. Obviously, we're getting great feedback. We still want to be hearing from you all the time, though, so you can reach out via social media using the hashtag WPC33. Spell out 33, not just the numbers. That way, continue to evolve the conversation as we build the Autumn's ultimate release. Also, make sure you're going over to WPC33.com to continue the conversation. You're going to find show-related playlists, lyrics, today's songs, influences that make Billy Corgan's music you love. And also, again, rate, subscribe, share, let people know. We want to give more stuff to you. We want to let William's voice be heard. Speaking of Billy Corgan, today, big show, Youngblood's going to be on here. How you feeling?
So excited. This young man is so talented. And you know what I love is there's different legacies that you help create when you have success in the music business. And when you see a young artist like this who name checks not only your band, but also other bands of your generation, is something that's influenced him and inspired him to want to be himself and really break down boundaries on every level of the music business, where he's brought sort of rock and alternative to the mainstream, which I can tell you is impossible to do. So this is really a testament to the young man's talent. So the fact that he'll be here with us today in conversation is very exciting, because it's not often I get to talk to somebody in the modern music world that I truly do like and respect. And so I think this is going to be a very enlightening conversation.
I'm looking forward to that conversation, but I have to dig right down into Embracer. when I first started hearing the song, when it first kicked in, I had all these different thoughts in my head. I thought Tron, I thought David Bowie. It's a very different feel and a very different song than the one we heard last week with The Good and Goodbye. So tell us a little bit about Embracer.
Embracer is an interesting song in that sometimes I'll write songs and I'm not really sure where they go. They kind of grow on me. And what I mean by that is not everything in music is sort of an immediate sensory sort of feeling. There are those moments where you write like the riff of Cherub Rock and you're like, oh man, this is something. Other songs are sort of like a romance. They sort of take time to develop and you really find the heart and soul of the song. There's a sort of personal taste in it that I like in terms of like things I like to hear and feel when I do music. And so maybe I'm biased because I wrote the song, but I don't always love everything I do to the extent that I want to listen to it, although it might be an expression of the way that I feel. I really do love this song. And in particular, this being the fourth song of the Autumn 33 songs, this song sort of returns to the narrative of June in space. Where we left off June was the last we saw June was shiny spaceship. He'd punched in the March of Life code. He's floating off towards the sun. But we don't actually see June's reaction past her recognizing that he's left. Now that we've sort of gone through what we've gone through, we return to June in space and we figure out what's going to happen next in the story.
The vibe I got from it was it had a sense of transcendence. And I, again, have been trying to follow along to where I think the narrative's going. You know better than I do. And with Shiny on the march, the transcendence of life and all this, I really thought that this might be him discovering that there was something else on the path there. Not what he expected, but a brand new, completely new universe or something.
Wrong again.
Obviously. I'm nailing it.
No, what it is June feels she must do something. If you remember in previous episodes, I referred to her having a sense of destiny about Shiny. Okay, now she's in that moment where she has to make a decision. Remember, she put herself in space to be close to Shiny. So what does she do? She decides to sing to Shiny, as she often does. She feels like she can communicate to him through song. What she does is she recognizes Shiny's place in her life, his importance as an artist, as her importance as a muse to the world. She may have an overinflated sense of his value, but that's what she believes in, right? That's all about character belief. And so she makes a decision in this particular moment of what she's going to do in reaction to Shiny. She, in essence, refuses to accept that Shiny's going to die.
It's so deep right there. And then, you know, I think a lot of people come, you can get a lot of connections with people who have that same moment in their life of realization. And I think that that's really good, the connection of, you know, do I act or do I not act? Do I follow my heart? Do I continue to do this thing that I love? Or is it all out of my hands? And you have to react in that moment, otherwise it will slip through.
Yes, the key here is that she chooses not to suicide herself. She chooses to take action. She refuses to accept Shiny's decision. She could easily say, well, that was his decision, I respect it. Because again, she doesn't have a relationship with him in reality. It's all strictly in her mind. How she perceives him as an artist, how she perceives him as a man. So what she chooses to do, and unbeknownst to anybody, of course, because we're in the narrative, is when she was going on her ship, she smuggled on the ability to communicate back to Earth in a very, very primitive way. Now, the sun has to be at a particular aspect. It has to sort of wipe out the ability to be tracked. And so what she does is she sends a message down to Earth. She can only do so anonymously on a message board, but she leaves a coded message that only a Shiny fan would understand. Because you got to remember, he's been completely erased from human reality. There's no trace of him. There's no sign of him. So if you just Google his name, to use a modern parlance, nothing comes up. There's no picture. There's no nothing. There's nothing. He doesn't exist in modern technology frame. Sorry, I'm poor to say it, but I get a picture in my mind that my mouth doesn't speak. So she chooses to put anonymously on a message board using a very primitive form of communication on a message board that only a Shiny fan would recognize. And she says basically that Shiny has taken the march of life, hoping that somebody on Earth will do something to change his course.
Now, let me ask you this. Now you say Shiny doesn't exist on any of the information. Obviously, Shiny existed before. Are there powers that be that are out there responsible for trying to censor and block out Shiny and eliminate him from history?
Well, you could argue they exist now, so they certainly exist in the future. There are AI systems, and there are people who commandeer these AI systems that are able to snuff out any information that refers to this former person named Shiny or Glass or Zero. So again, if you were just to go on common, Googling, you would find no trace of Shiny. He does not exist. There is no picture. There is no interview. There is no text. There is no reference. His name doesn't even appear in a search engine in any form. The person known as Shiny does not exist. He has been digitally erased. So when she puts her message on a message board, she is hoping somebody, and remember, they've been in space for 20 years. She is hoping somebody will respond and do something. She does not know what. It is the equivalent of putting a message in a bottle and throwing into the ocean and hoping that somebody finds it.
That sounds amazingly powerful to me. It feels like a commentary on the sustainability of celebrity, but also the fact that eventually everyone will be forgotten. However, the sweetness of it is that regardless of if the world forgets what you once were, someone will still be immensely impacted and affected by that.
How about maybe eventually everyone will be erased? That's a different thing to contemplate in my nihilism. Here's a lyric from the song that I think gets to the heart of the matter, because I talked before in a previous episode about using the lyric to promote narrative. Shake hard this summons with bottles tossed down said seas of noise in notes and sighs to the void. I'd love you to follow a star on the rise entombed by blue. So Shiny's in the sky floating away. In heat of the sage, I've sent out a faith once removed. I realize it's only the lonely who should lose. I realize, said the knife to the spoon, it's only the lonely who should lose. So what she's saying is, Shiny doesn't deserve the fate that Shiny has chosen for himself. Shiny is worth more than this. And I, June, the character, am going to try my best with the tools that I have in hand, which is essentially a bottle thrown into the ocean. She puts an anonymous message on a message board and hopes somebody will notice. Now, I want to tell you one story from my life, and this is true. When I was about 6 or 7 years old, there was a project at school, and they said, look, we're going to give everyone a balloon, and you're going to write a little note here with your address on, and hopefully somebody will find it and write you back. And actually, somebody wrote me back from very northern Canada. My balloon actually went 800 miles away, and a young woman found my note on a seashore somewhere up in northern Canada and wrote me a note. And I had a pen pal correspondence with this young woman at the age of 6 or 7.
Wow.
Is that too deep for the podcast? Or
no, I think that's right there. And I think that it really shows just how special everything is in those moments, and then how you can create connections with somebody that through doing something as simple as, you know, throwing a balloon or sending a message on a message board, you can make that connection with someone that you've never met before.
To me, the key element in life as a driver of energy is faith. You must have faith. You must have faith that tomorrow's going to be better, that it's worth going on, that it's worth trying. I was told as a young artist, I had zero chance of being successful. Zero. Not 1%, zero. I had no chance. Do something else. Imagine if I'd listened to that. Imagine if Jimmy Chamberlain or Darcy Retzky or James E. had listened to those same messages from the people around them. We had faith that what we were going to do was going to be meaningful. And even when we became successful, people told us we were insane. Faith is at the center of this story. She has faith that what she's about to do is going to do something to save the man that she loves.
I think that's a good note for us to go ahead and take a quick break. When we come back, the world premiere of the song Embracer. You're listening to 33. Also, when we come back from break, Youngblood joins the broadcast. Stay tuned.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Now available for pre-order at MadamZuzus.com. The autographed 4LP box set of Autumn, the new album by the Smashing Pumpkins. This 4LP colored vinyl pressing is limited to 1,333 units and will be machine numbered and autographed by the Smashing Pumpkins, Billy Corgan, Jimmy Chamberlain, James Iha, and Jeff Schroeder. The limited edition box set includes the three-act, 33-song rock opera That Is Autumn and 10 exclusive unreleased songs over the course of 5 7-inch singles that will not be available for streaming or found anywhere else. Go to MadamZuzus.com to pre-order today. Free shipping in the USA. 3-unit limit per order. Pre-order will ship after April 21st, 2023.
Welcome back, everyone. This is William Patrick Corgan for the 33 Podcast. Of course, you know that because you're listening, but I like to say it because it makes me feel like I'm an official presenter. Listen, it's my great honor to present the world debut of this song, Embracer. It's one of my favorite songs on the record. I really love it. It's a song that feels very personal to me because it is a song about faith. I really hope you enjoy it. Embracer from the Smashing Pumpkins.
Leash what it lays. I'm used. I realize. I believed I was lonely in you. I realize. Said the knife to the spoon. I believed I was lonely in you. Said sails of noise, and notes and sighs to the void. I'd love you to follow a star on the rise, a tomb to buy blue. In head of the sage, I've sent out a babe. Once removed.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You just listened to the world premiere of Embracer off of the new Smashing Pumpkins album, Autumn. And at this time, I'm very excited because we got a great guest lined up for you folks. Youngblood, welcome
Hello.
To 33.
Hello, everybody. How are you?
We're rocking. It's so weird in technology, right? We're talking on whatever this is, but you're down the road here in Chicago. We're both
in Chicago.
Literally,
that literally modern technology. But what an honor. What an honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. My honor, too. And we're doing the digital high five here. Listen, I want to jump in a bit because I want to use our time wisely. I've been interviewed 1,000 times. I know you've been interviewed 1,000 times. So I don't want to ask any of the same questions. So hopefully I'm going to try to take it on a different road. I think what's really remarkable about you is you have the skill set to be a rock star, and you are in your own way, but you've also sort of had a lot of success in pop, which is very rare. You sort of crossed over in a way that very few people do. I remember the first time I really became aware of the level of your talent was I saw you, I think, on the Bowie special with Mike Garson.
Oh, wow.
I can't remember what song you sang. Is it Life on Mars?
Yeah, or, it was Life
on
Mars.
I got chills thinking about it right here. I knew David, was friendly with David, and certainly know how hard those songs are to sing. So when I saw you sing that, I thought, man, this kid can really sing. And then I looked up a bunch of other stuff and saw, wow, you can really sing. So I want to ask you, it's more of inside baseball, to use an American term, but when you have that decision in front of you between, hey, I can go straight into alternative rock and be one of those people, but I also have the ability to be a pop kind of crossover star, which is a different game than it was 20 or 30 years ago, because you would have, back in the day, you had to pick a lane. Because if you were alternative, you couldn't be pop, and they crucify you if you went pop. And if you were pop, you could never go back alternative. Where I think you can go anywhere direction you want. Machine Gun Kelly is a perfect example of somebody who's kind of been all over the place and had success. So what's your decision-making sort of when you're, let's say, you're young, but a little younger than you are now. What was your decision-making, kind of what road you wanted to go down?
I think it was all just like feeling first. You know what I mean? I think like I wanted to kind of, I really enjoy kicking the bear. You know what I mean? If the bear's biting me, I just like kicking it. So it's just like, I enjoy like going into different hemispheres and just writing what comes out of me. You know what I mean? I think like, I love so much music. It gave me so much insight and kind of understanding of the person I am. I see music as like a feeling. So whatever's going to come out of me that day will come out of me. If I want to do a metal song today, if I want to do an hyperpop song tomorrow, if I want to do a ballad, if I want to, because that's it. And I think like rock and roll now, or it always has, but most importantly to me now, it is about like that kind of word almost swallows me up. Rock and roll star, whatever, swallows me up, because I think the attitude and the feeling is what matters. Within pop music, I wanted to bring a bite to it. Within rock music, I wanted to bring a size to it.
Yeah. Are you aware, and I don't expect you to, I'm sort of just curious, are you aware that sort of previous generations in terms of rock music didn't have the sort of options that your generation has in terms of musical reach? And I'm sure you're sort of aware with the Pumpkins, like we got crucified no matter what direction we went in because we weren't alternative enough for the alternative people. We weren't pop enough for the pop people. And so I look at with great admiration at what you're doing because you really are sort of owning the game yourself. But are you aware that wasn't the case sort of even just 20 years ago?
100%. Even now, like if I read a forum about me, anybody that's over 30 is like, oh, I don't get it at first. And then they might fall into the world. And I think that's beautiful because I love nothing more in this world than changing somebody's perception. I think that's why I wanted to get into writing music in the first place. You know what I mean? And I think like, I always say to people, a lot of the time, everyone thinks Youngblood is like about very much young people. And yeah, it is initially. But at my shows, it's like 14 to 80. You know what I mean? And like, I get so psyched out when I see like a 65, 70-year-old person wearing like a Cure t-shirt or like a Muddy Waters t-shirt or something like that on my show. I'm like, yes, it means we're doing something right, man. Do you know what I mean?
I'm not 65. I'm in my mid-30s. I'm lying. I'm in my late 30s here. But first heard you with Parents, not my cup of tea, but then Original Me, much more my cup of tea. And then I heard Tissues, completely different sound. That's three different vibes, three different genres. You can hit them all and you're doing it great. And you're absolutely right. You have something that just bridges that gap and brings people that usually wouldn't be touched by it into it. And I've heard you in interviews bring up the fact that you know, what does young blood mean? And you said, I'm only 50% of young blood. And that also resonated with me, is your awareness that as a artist, as a performer, as somebody else, there's more to who you are that people will take in than maybe what you even realize.
Well, it was so crazy, man, because that, I think that's why I got into writing music, and that's what truly blew my mind about it. I think, like, I came on a time when a generation crashed, and again, it's also cyclical. Everyone was quite tired of becoming boxed in, and what are you? Tell me what you are. What are you? You know what I mean? That's what I experienced my whole life, and I didn't know. You know what I mean? I didn't want to know, and maybe tomorrow I'll be something different. And that was kind of what I really wanted to, I almost own and tattoo on my forehead, you know what I mean, as an artist. And then you kind of don't, like, and I can't wait to ask you about this, but like, when you put something into the world and thousands, then 100,000, then millions of people resonate with it, it's not, it doesn't become just yours anymore. And I think that's so trippy, but also beautiful, because I remember the first time something became somebody else's, I was like, whoa, you feel like that? Because I'd just written a song, you know what I mean? And then they came back to me like, yeah, I feel like that. And you're like, well, I've got so much more to say like that. And then you write more, and then you put more out, and then more people like come back, and it's just like a spiral. And I just think, like in every album, I want, in every show, I don't want 2 hours of the same songs. I want it to be like the best DJ set ever, because 1 minute I'm singing Parents, which goes crazy because people find their liberation within it. The next minute I'm shaking my ass to Tissues. The next minute I'm snarling my lip and trying to be like, you know what I mean, Billy Idol or Jagger in The Funeral, and then the next minute I'm doing a metal song with Bring Me The Horizon. You know what I mean? I want like my set to have layers, so it's like, what the fuck? I'm just like, you're never gonna get complacent, you're never gonna get bored, because we mentioned Bowie. That Bowie and Gaga were massive influences for me in terms of that kind of sheer courage to just go like, genre, character, identity can change within art. And I was like, that's cool. That's so dope.
Well, you hit in on something, and I want to pick up on something you said. For my generation, Gen X, the 90s, the idea of being more than one person was sort of weirdly forbidden. It was seen as a form of inauthenticity. So how could you be metal 1 second and psychedelic the next and pop the next? There must be something corrupt about you. You must have no moral center. Therefore, your music is not worthy of being seen as authentic. Oftentimes, the media would sort of push people who were just one type of artist past us and say they were more important because they were, quote unquote, more authentic. As far as the thing you were talking about, how a song becomes not yours anymore and kind of becomes part of the culture, that's really wild. And I've experienced that a bunch of times. And I know you will more than you already have. What's really wild is if you live long enough and you are successful long enough, which I do believe you will be because you're a world-class talent. And I always believe it's a talent-driven business. Anybody can sort of make a star for a little while, but you can't sustain it. And I think you've already cut the grade. So that's why I'm really interested in where you're going to go. But to the point I'm trying to make is, what's really weird is if you live long enough, you get to this point where the old you starts to echo against the new you. And then you get this weird kind of thing of like, people want to talk about you. This happens to me all the time. I'll be in an airport and people will come up and talk to me about, say, Siamese Dream 1993. So it's almost 30 years ago, right? And I'm the guy who wrote the song. And I wrote all the songs, pretty much. I produced it with Butch Vig. I mean, I was there. I did all the guitar. I was there every minute of every day. I was on that album. And people will come up and talk to me about the album as if I wasn't there. And I'm the guy that if I could do them a favor, I should talk to the guy who did the album, because I'm not that guy anymore. And if I could talk to that guy, they'd like that band to come back. and if I could just sort of pass the message along, and I'm like, no, I actually wrote those songs. Like, here I am. And it's so disassociatively weird, because they've created an image of their mind that doesn't sync with where you are in modern reality. I watched Bowie go through it. Speaking of David, I watched David go through it in the 90s, where people were sort of disappointed at who he was in the 90s. And they kind of wouldn't let Ziggy Stardust or Aladdin Sane go.
Oh, yeah.
And he was like, no, I'm still that guy. I just kind of moved on. You know, I'm a parent and I'm singing about other things. And it was like, oh, you know, drag, why can't you be Ziggy Stardust forever? And he's like, didn't you see the film where I broke up the band at the end of the film? You know, at the Odeon, you know, all back then. It's like very strange. So hopefully you'll live long enough and be successful long enough to see that echo come back, because that's where it gets really weird.
Dude, it's so interesting. I've even felt it a little bit as well, like going into this new record. Like, I kind of like, first album was so angry and almost made in a bedroom, and it was very much influenced by like Eminem and industrial music, but also the Arctic Monkeys at the same time. You know what I mean? It was literally like toy keyboardville. Like, I was literally like, what the hell can I make that sounds crazy? And then going into songs like Parents and stuff like that. And then I moved to an album called Weird, which was so, I don't know, I was listening to Queen and I was listening to like this larger than life thing where it could be 11 things at once. And then everyone expected, like, and then I wrote some songs and we had some hits with like Americans call it pop punk, which is like something that I didn't really know, you know what I mean, until like everyone called me it. And then everyone expected me to do that on this new album. But I was just like, I always want to move. I think what's in the world is already there. You know what I mean? You ain't going to write 1979 10 times. And people almost sometimes expect you to.
Well, I mean, it's working for you because right now you have your third studio album just came out. It's charting all over the world. It's number one in 6 countries, number 3 in the U.S. charts. You know, we were talking about David Bowie and his ability to bridge that gap internationally. When you started writing music and you decided this is the path you want to take, was there a mindset of I'm going to become an international star? You're touring the U.S. right now. And the fact of the matter is, from the outside looking in, most people might not realize like this guy's a huge star in another part of the world. He just happens to be a star here too. Is that crazy to you?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I think like you always see that image in your head. Like, I'll never forget this moment. I was on my bed and I remember watching Freddie play Live Aid on a really bad VHS. You know what I mean? I remember watching it in my room. And you always dream about playing to thousands of people, but you don't kind of, you'll never know what it actually is to get there and the journey and everything and the excitement and then the pain and then the anxiousness and then I always say it's like 80% pain to see 20% of the face of God. You know what I mean? That's what I say, like,
dead on.
Roll this, you know what I mean?
Dead on.
I feel a connection happening between the two of you right now, because that sounds like something Billy would have said.
I totally understand what he's saying. I used to see a therapist about 20 years ago, and he said, you know, when you're young and you have a dream of, you know, I watched Freddie Mercury too. I watched it live. I don't think you were born. I watched Freddie Mercury that day live on television, right? You envision, like every kid dreams, you envision like one day I would like that to be me. The fact of the matter is that for 99.999% of the world, whatever their dream is, I want to play basketball like Michael Jordan or, you know, Ronaldo or whatever, you know, you want to be great at whatever you do. For 99.9999% of the world, they'll never know what that feels like. So as you go through life, everyone's telling you that your dream is delusional and you're insane. And then one day you find yourself and you're actually on that stage and there are tens of thousands of people in front of you. And you're like, oh my God, this is actually happening. I'm not insane. Oh, and by the way, now I'm experiencing something that only a very few people on this planet have ever experienced.
Yeah.
And then you walk off stage and you run into one of your old mates and they're like, oh, getting a little big for your britches, aren't you?
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, whoa, hold on. I'm the same guy I was. I just had a dream and here I am. I could still go out and have a drink with you at the bar. Oh, you know, you're not how you used to be. It's like, what are you talking about? I've always been like this.
Fully. It's literally a constant state of flux. It's just like,
That's it.
And then it's so crazy. Like, and I couldn't wait to meet you, because I think when I meet like people, I don't know, I always say when I meet people I want to be when I grow up, you know what I mean? I think artists who...
Don't grow up though. Grow up.
Do you know what I mean? Who are artists who stayed around forever and made a massive indent in art. I think that was always my biggest dream. I just wanted to indent art, whatever that meant. Like, in terms of culture, in terms of a generational idea and everything. It just, if it was you or it was The Clash or it was Gaga or it was the Sex Pistols, they just indented art. I always get excited, you know what I mean, to kind of meet me heroes when, you know what I mean, I got so many questions for you all about, like, because the one thing...
Ask whatever you want. That's what we're here to do, just to talk, you know? I'm so happy you're here, you know?
The thing I feel is, it's so funny, it's like, it's almost like a book that is written that we all go through, and the chapters are almost the same, but you go through them in different orders.
Yeah.
Life of like, that's the career of rock and roll, that's the book. What chapter are you in at the minute? And I was just saying, it got so funny on this last project, because like Youngblood started as a subculture defined on like love and acceptance, and then it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, which I always wanted it to get. You know what I mean? I always wanted to have this ambition to reach people, even people who weren't like me. And I think that was a big misconception about me. It's like I was almost like creating a space where we all looked the same or we all dressed the same or we all had the same ideas, when actually that's the opposite of what I want to do. I want to bring everyone together. But when it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and the kind of the mainstream bleeds in, it was the first time everyone questioned my authenticity and if it was real.
Is that's
that
it, right?
Was that what you went through? Because I was like, I'm not just crazy. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, no. It's a weird thing. It's particularly vicious in America. It has a different viciousness in America. America particularly operates on the premise that no one deserves to be on top. And there's that beautiful thing where it's like, first they doubt you, then they mock you, then they accept you, then they try to control you or something like that. It's just some sort of axiom. And of course, you know, the UK has its own sort of vicious version. But yeah, the authenticity thing is a very, very pernicious and funny trick that they play. For example, you know, you said, I mean, there I was on me bed, right? I don't remember anyone standing there next to you when you're sitting on your bed telling you, hey, this is what you got to do. This is what you got to go through. This is what you're going to have to navigate. This is what you're going to have to deal with in terms of your mental health, your physical health. You're going to have to navigate the scam artists, the crap managers, the people who lie and flatter you, who would abandon you in a second if you were dying on the side of the road. You're going to have to navigate all that. In the middle of all that, you got to write new music. You got to find something new to say. You have to track people from all over the world who don't even speak English.
Yeah.
And if you do, it's just like winning the lottery, or you know, it's a miracle. Like you actually get through. Freddie Mercury got through, you got through, Kurt Cobain got through, I got through, whatever. We got through. Whatever that is, Gaga. You get through. And then this other game starts. Well, I don't know if I would do it that way. Don't you feel uncomfortable? This new song's a little more pop than the last one. What does that mean? I think one advantage you do have is, and I mean this in a kind way to you, the culture that you're in right now as a young person is so fake on so many levels that the fact that you have authenticity makes you really, really stand out. Where in my generation, you had a bunch of people pretending to be real who were fake. And I would actually stand there and say, no, I'm actually real. I'm not fake. And they would go, no, you're just as fake as everybody else. And I'd say, no, I'm not. I'm not. I'm telling the truth. So I think you have an advantage in at least living in a false culture. I don't think that makes it better. I think it actually makes it harder for you, because to be authentic in a false culture is like, you know, being a spiritual person and amongst a bunch of Satanists.
Yeah. Dude, like, no cap. Like, Kyle literally just saw my mind just get...
Oh, yeah. You were just like, it's happening. It's real. I'm not wrong. Everything I felt was real.
No, you're
Thank
right.
You.
Listen, here's what I know, and I had to change my opinion. You know, when pop came in hard at the end of the 90s, I've told this story a few times in different venues, but I was in a room once at the Chateau Marmont with Bono, Britney Spears was there, Natalie Imbruglia was there, Daniel Johns from Silverchair was there, a bunch of other celebrities. It was typical Hollywood schmoz. And I met Britney Spears for the one and only time, and that was when Britney was like at the hot peak of Britney craziness, you know, 19-year-old Britney, right? And I looked and I thought, this is just a human being. This is not a cartoon. This is a human being who's navigated, in her case, Disney and all that stuff. And I started to really look at the pop people and say, you know what? If anybody reaches the top of this mountain, you got to give them respect. And it kind of changed my mind at that point. So I'm going to sit here and say, hey, I don't care who anybody is. They navigate this gauntlet and they get through that. You got to give them respect. It's very easy to stand on the outside and say, here's what you should have done. I've been in so many meetings where somebody kind of says or doesn't say, if you could only do Siamese Dream again, it would be really good for your career, buddy. And I always say the same thing. I don't give a dot, 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 because I just don't care. The reason I became that guy was because I didn't care in the beginning. So I definitely don't care now. In fact, you gave me any power. It's only sort of justified in my mind that my instincts, and that's the only advice I would give you. And I would say this in private or in public. At the end of the day, no matter what anybody tells you, you've got to trust yourself. You got to trust yourself. Only you know what's right for you. And if you want to call yourself a brand, you want to give yourself a name, you want to call yourself your real name, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, you got to wake up and know who you are. And they will do everything in their power. And I'm talking about a wide, vast they. The music business, the touring business, the media business, the fans even, sometimes even though they mean the best. They don't really, really understand, because if they did, they would do it. And I always tell people in the music business, if you could get rid of me, you would. You would get rid of me on a heartbeat. I'm too much trouble. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not nice enough. You would get rid of me. And they always laugh, and because it's the truth. They would get rid of me if they could. They can't get rid of me. And they won't get rid of you. That's the best part. They will not get rid of you.
Dude, I think that's the kind of the ultimate, that's what drives you really, isn't it? It's like, again, like, we're bringing it full circle. And I was like, I love to kick the bear. It's like that bear is a million different things.
Yeah.
Initially, it's the industry not wanting you to get through. And then it's the general public thinking you're fake. And then it's your A&R man. And then it's your partner. And then it's, and I think that's kind of every time I experience that, a new Youngblood album comes out. So then I become almost thankful for that bow in whatever form it was coming. Yeah.
Okay. I see you, Joe. We got to go into Eye of One. Is that where you were going to go?
That's exactly where I was going, because we know that Youngblood, you chose this song, I Am One. It's on the Gish album. It came out as a single. Youngblood, why did you pick this song for this episode?
I think I was like, it's special because like I am talking to you now as I am kind of really falling in love with this album more than ever. You know what I'm saying? I think like, I know this album, you know what I mean? But I was literally in the studio with Travis Barker, and we were just talking, and he literally was like, yo, you heard Gish? And I'm like, yeah, I've heard Gish. But he's like, no, but like, have you heard Gish? Have you like sat God bless there him. With it? You know what I mean? He's like, have you sat there with it? And I was like, well, no, I haven't actually sat there with, you know what I mean? Like sat there with an album. I think like, I kind of couldn't have done that until right now, because I was always a million directions, you know what I mean? And then I was like, all right, cool. So I went back from the studio, and it was like, I work really late. So it was like 4 a.m., but I was like, oh, I'm not tired yet. You know what I mean? And I was like, and I listened to it as the sun came up, and I just love this, like, what an opener. Like, and I remember the first moment I heard it, I was like, the drums. And when I was young, I was like, I was finding American music, because I was brought up on Oasis, and I was brought on the Stone Roses, and I was brought up on, you know what I mean, the Stones and the Clash and the Damned and all that stuff, and T-Rex. And the guitar, like, I remember just hearing that guitar sound, and it almost, like, gave me a bridge that I could cross the Atlantic from Doncaster, you know what I mean, to end up in Boston or New York City or something, because I was like, it felt familiar yet completely alien. And I was like, I'll always remember that. You know what I mean? And as I kind of fall back into this album, I was like, oh, whoa, this opening to an album's f***ed up. It starts with the drums.
Yeah. Well, we were very influenced by UK music. And that was one thing that a lot of the Americans did not understand about us is we love the shoegaze stuff like My Bloody Valentine, but we also loved The Who and The Stones, and the sort of slashing kind of style that they had. It's very different than sort of more blues-based American rock. The other thing that you need to know, and this is my big claim to fame, is I wrote that drum beat. That's my one drum beat I ever wrote.
Oh, that's so crazy.
We were in rehearsal just down the road from where you are presently in Chicago, and I said to Jimmy Chamberlain, I said, I got this drum beat, you know? And we didn't know each other that well then. You know, he'd only been in the band a short time. And he's like, okay, go ahead. And so I kind of go, you know what I mean? Do this beat. And he starts playing. He looks at me like, this is so boring. I'm like, it's great. Don't change it. And so that's my one beat. That's my one claim to fame as I wrote that drum beat.
I think we should take a little break here. Joe, you want to throw it to the song?
Yeah, I'm really excited to hear this. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a short break right now. We're going to listen to I Am One. You're listening to 33. We'll be right back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to 33. We just listened to I Am One. And Billy, I'm going to jump right into this because I just watched the music video and I just love the feel of Billy Corgan in that time. You got the long hair. I think you got six chains on and just it's just that rockin' concert feel. And I honestly really like the music video.
You know, I hated that video and I rejected it, which is why it only came out about 10 years later on a DVD.
Burn Joe Galli.
Here's the inside baseball on that video. So we put out Gish on Caroline Records, but they were a subsidiary of Virgin Records. Virgin Records did not feel we were strong enough to be on a major label, Caroline being the biggest independent label at the time. Gish, our first album, went on to be, at that time, the biggest independent selling record of all time. So in the middle of the success of ourselves and then Nirvana and Pearl Jam taking off, both being on major labels, I got called into a meeting and they said, we want to move Gish over to the main label and we want to relaunch the album on the big label. And we're going to put a bunch of money and you're going to be a star kid. And I said, no. And they freaked out and thought I was the devil because why wouldn't I want to grab success? And I said, it's not a crossover record. It wasn't made to be a crossover record. And you're going to throw it out there and it's not going to do what you think it's going to do. So somehow I got people in the company to agree with me. So in their thrall of trying to get us to get in behind Nirvana and Pearl Jam's success, they decided to take I Am One and make it a single kind of after the success of the album on the independent charts. And the only way they could sort of figure it out money-wise was to shoot us live or something and cut it together and do kind of a crap from the Metro video. And I saw it and I knew exactly what they were doing and I rejected it. And so that's why that never happened, because I wanted nothing to do with what they were trying to do, which was basically turn us into somebody else's band.
So Youngblood, it's kind of crazy that you picked this song, because just in the previous episode of the podcast, there was a thing that was alluded to called Art Breakdown, which was Billy basically, some would say, losing his mind on stage in front of his band and just going on tirades. And this was the song that was known for the Art Breakdown. So you just have just nicely smoothed one episode to the other with this. Now, Billy, I looked at the lyrics of this song and I always want to know, where's the background? Where's this? So let me tell you what I think it is.
This is my favorite part, like, when Kyle tries to figure out what I'm talking about.
To me, it came off as essentially an individual realizing that everything is in flux. The world is always not going to be what you want it to be, but you can change that. One voice matters in the chaos of everything, can just make a revolution happen. If that's true, the tirades make sense to me. If it's not, I have no idea what I'm talking about.
You're wrong, Kyle. It's a song about God. It's a song about God. I'd read an article about, I think his name was Bishop Tutu, who was a South African minister, and he was talking about the triune in Christianity, which is the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost. And it's very complicated in Christian theology how God is composed of three things, because if God is one, well, how is God three things? But these three things are perfect, so somehow the three perfect things make one perfect God. It's very confusing, and it was certainly confusing to me as I stood in church when I was a kid and watched Jesus sort of suffering on the cross and said, how does this all work? He suffers, but he's God. And so the opening lyric, I am one as you are three, is an allusion to the triune, which is, and it's a heretical concept, generally speaking, particularly if you grew up where I grew up, where you had a lot of holy rollers, which the idea is like, and Jesus does talk about the idea that we are all basically God. He doesn't mean it like you are God, you are of God, which is sort of slightly different. In hardcore Christian theology, you have to accept Jesus to be considered for going to heaven, but you can't be God, but you are of God. So it's all a bunch of confusion as far as I'm concerned. So it's my version of, right, I'm of God, I'm made of God, and these things make me, and so I'm one as you are three. It's just an allusion to that, however crudely.
So sick.
So I was sitting on my bed and
sitting on my bed.
I was thinking I'm God.
Is that what
you
thought you'd get?
What,
you picked the song.
Wait, hold on. Youngblood, at what point did the messianic, I am God come into your life?
Oh, dude, I had a feeling it was about like spirit or God or something. Because obviously like within the first three lines you say Messiah. And I was like, oh yeah, you know what I mean? Like second line, trying to find a Messiah in your Trinity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I was like, whoa. I was like, that was cool. Cause it was almost like, I didn't grow up with a lot of, like, my mum went to church and there was that around, but it was almost kind of like a religious mentality in where I was from without it being like praying. You know what I'm saying? It was almost like where I was from in the world was a religion in terms of sexuality, in terms of expression, and it was almost a restraint. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't a liberating religion. It was a restraint. And songs like this and heightened my mood because it almost felt psychedelic. You know what I mean? And when somebody feels psychedelic, it feels freeing of the mind. If the restraint of the religion I was talking about was gray.
Well, you're dead on. Because that's the thing. I started doing a lot of LSD in the late 80s. And as you do when you do LSD, you either think you see God or you start to think God's talking to you, whatever. But the point is I grew up in a very similar thing where I went to church when I was young. I walked away from the church. But, you know, you kind of grew up in a society that puts their morality on you, their idea of sexuality on you, you know, everything from don't masturbate, you know, you're going to die, and all this stuff they would tell us to keep us from figuring out who we were. And of course, that's where a lot of great American rock comes from, sort of breaking through that programming, whether it was the Stooges or the Ramones or Nirvana or Jane's Addiction. You know, it's like, no, the world you're being presented is not real, and we can show you through our art and through the way we move through life. So that was my grappling. I Am One was my grappling with the idea of, like, I've been told a bunch of stuff about religion, particularly in the Catholic Church, that I knew in my heart wasn't true. That Jesus as a savior really wasn't saying the things they said he was saying. At least that was my interpretation. And LSD in particular got me to sort of think beyond what I was told and realize, no, we're actually all connected. Everybody's kind of the same. And if you're a human, well, then you got to figure out what your divinity is and then in return how to share that divinity with others, which is what really becoming a star is about. If you think about it on the allegorical or sort of symbolic sense, being a star is figuring out your best self and then sharing your best self with others. And I would encourage everybody to do that. I don't think you have to be a musician to be a star. I meet nurses who are stars. I meet police officers who are stars. I meet people who are bakers who are stars. They just want to share their love for the thing that they love with everybody else. That what it means literally to shine, you know, to shine like the sun on others. So that's kind of how what I was thinking about. It wasn't about me as much as what trying to figure out who I was going to be.
Yeah, I love that. And it's almost like, I don't know. I think it's like when you speak so much about you, like with that title, you speak so much about yourself. It's almost like a generational reflection on everyone else. You know what I mean? It's like I Am One. It's almost like it almost felt like you are me as well. You know what I mean?
That's so interesting. You point that out because I had trouble when I first wrote that lyric, and I remember staring at the lyric on the page. I Am One. I'm thinking, I don't know if I can say that. Because in the generation I was in, that was considered egotistical to make it about yourself. This is a weird thing. And I know UK culture has a similar thing. Like, oh, don't get too high on your horse.
Tall poppy syndrome. Yeah.
Yeah. Tall poppy. Right. So it was hard for me to even to say I am one, which is so weird because what is wrong with that? If you believe in God, which I do, and you believe that everybody has something special that God gave them, which I do. And I grew up with a disabled brother and I grew to admire people in the disabled community because I realized how bright and brilliant each individual person could be. The fact that they were born with a condition didn't mean they were anything less. In fact, oftentimes it made them more because they had something special that only they understood because of their experiences.
Completely.
So it was hard for me to say, hey, here I am. But looking back on it, you know, first song on our debut album, you know, there was a sort of a bit of a brass balls to the thing to say, okay, we're coming out swinging. Here's the drums. Here's the guitars. I'm going for it right out of the box. And people connected with it. And I think it was because they didn't see it as egoistic. They saw it as sort of a rallying cry.
Yeah, that's what I felt. You know what I mean? It felt like a liberational statement, even though it was so personal. You know what I mean? And that's cool.
What was it? Richard Ashcroft, the drugs don't work. In this case, the drugs did work. And
definitely.
Gentlemen, do you have any questions about the song?
Well, now that you brought that up, I think that's going to be another good addition to our merchandise store. We'll get a shirt that just says the drugs did work.
I go with drugs do work, but I'll probably get trouble for that.
Drugs do work there.
You know, with Autumn having the space opera, as I keep on referring it to, we brought this up multiple times on the podcast so far. We talked about ancient religions and what the basis might be. Youngblood, this is going to come out of left field to you. Have you ever had an alien experience?
Oh, God, have I ever had an alien experience? So funny, I get asked that a lot in America. In the UK.
Really?
In the UK.
Oh, what a weird
it's
culture.
A very American question.
In the
Sorry.
UK, everyone's like, what are you talking about? Fucking alien. What are you talking about? Do you know what I mean? In America, but I don't know, but I've like Can I tell you something funny? This is a funny.
Yeah, yeah. Just don't curse.
This is a safe curse place. About
I thought, I've never said this to anyone, right? I thought I had this experience, right? So I'm sat with my girlfriend on a beach in the Bahamas and we just dropped mushrooms, right? And it's like, we're like heavily on mushrooms, you know what I mean? Almost when you take too many because it's like, oh, these aren't working. Then you take more and everything comes at once. You're like, oh,
that's what Jimmy Chamberlain of the Pumpkins calls the fatal error. Fatal error is when you go, actually, I haven't taken enough drugs. Let me take some more.
Yeah, and then you're just like, oh. So you go down. I went down to the beach because like we were staying and we walked onto the beach, sat on this sunbed. I'm like, this, I think it was the way the clouds were shaped and the moon was so orange, right? The way the clouds are shaped and in my head, I'm going, I didn't think that was the moon in my head. And it starts to morph itself into this weird thing. It looks like it's coming towards us. And I've never told anyone this story before. For 3.5 minutes, I am watching this moon, which is actually just the moon, come towards me. I call my mother and be like, Mom, I'm not good right now. I think I've seen extraterrestrial life in the Bahamas. And my mum's like, what are you talking about? Because my mum doesn't know I'm on mushrooms. You know what I mean? I didn't tell my mum. She's like, what are you talking about? Like, what are you trying to say to me? And I kind of came down. I was like, all right, I'm going to call you later. I'm going to figure it out. Run up the stairs to our friends. There's a party going upstairs. And we're just like, what is that? At this time, the cloud has moved out of the way. And my mate's just like, it's the moon. And I'm just like, oh.
Oh, yeah.
It is.
I am so jealous of that experience. And I'm going to Mexico for my 40th to experience a very similar thing as that. So
do you know?
Thank you for the precursor.
Do you know there is one conspiracy theory out there, or theory, that the moon is actually hollow. It's an alien base. And that's why the moon does not rotate. You know, the moon does not, what's the orbit? It orbits.
It doesn't rotate.
It doesn't rotate.
It's orbit. You're right. Yeah.
You know, the moon always faces us the exact same way, no matter where it is in the world.
That's crazy.
It's a body that does not move. And there's different theories. One theory is that the moon was once part of Earth, was in a cataclysmic collision and separated. And Earth was much more of a waterborne planet at the time, which is why our oceans are so deep. That's one theory. The other theory, of course, is that the moon is hollow and there's alien bases on the inside.
Whoa.
You didn't see Moonfall, did you? They just came out with a major motion
picture.
Do I
look like I watch movies?
I don't know. Now I know. Now the fans know. Billy doesn't watch movies.
A dark cave and just write sad songs. I do not watch movies. All right, let's talk. Let's finish a little bit more on I Am One since we're here to talk about the track. Quickly, we recorded the song twice. We did a demo of it, which became our very first single, Unlimited Potential Records. You can find that. And I had such trouble writing material for Gish that we ended up using the song again and doing a better version with Butch Vig in his studio up in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm trying to think of what else is pertinent to the song. My favorite part of the song in listening to it is the dual lead. that's just the guitar player in me. I love the dual leads going off.
So my big question is, looking back, so much distance between creating and listening in this day and age, is there a part of you that says, I would have done this completely different? Or are you just thinking, this is a great encapsulation of who I was at that time?
What I really appreciate about us is we always went hard, whatever lane we were in at the time. And at that point, we were very into psychedelic rock and playing very heavy for club audiences. So the record is really a reflection of who we were as a band on stage. And if you listen to recordings, in fact, we just released an archival recording of tapes of us from that time called the Rubano tapes. You can find that on madamzuzus.com if anybody's interested. We've been releasing our own archival music. You can hear that is the band. That's exactly how the band sounds live. There was something about the concussive nature. And, you know, as I oftentimes say, the great advantage of being an indie band circa 1990 was we would walk in and there'd be guys with little Vox amps and, you know, like drummers who could barely play, you know, and they're going to college. And we'd come in high on whatever we were high on and blasting Marshall stacks with Jimmy Chamberlain in the back, who was 3 times louder than every drummer on the planet. And we would just absolutely crush clubs because people couldn't deal with the volume. And we were so loud. We were just louder. Now, we weren't just loud because you turned it up. We were just loud off the stage. And so we would just crush people. So we were able to bring that energy back, and you can hear that energy in the record, that sort of sense of dynamics, and very much on the Knife's Edge. And we still play like that, which is wild, because that part of our style never left us. But certainly that type of writing, I don't know if I could go back to that type of writing, because it was very simple and in many ways sort of blues-based. My dad was a blues guitar player, so I grew up around a lot of blues, but I can't say I have a huge affinity for the blues as a musician playing the blues. But blues-based psychedelia seemed to go with the drugs we were taking.
So sick. We started last year. I've got another album that I don't know when it's going to come out. It was New Year's Day 2021, and I've been off for Christmas, and I just, like, if I have 3 weeks off, I get really itchy, you know what I mean? I'm just like, carpet doesn't look the same, you know what I mean? So I took all my mates up to, like, I called my producer on New Year's Day and was like, yo, what are you doing? He's like, well, it's New Year's Day. I was like, get on the train, come up to the north. And we went into this house. And it was so funny because we made a full psychedelic rock album in a month, and it's just sitting there.
Oh, fantastic.
Fully sitting there. And I don't know when it'll come out yet. I just want to kind of drop it and let it be a thing of it. I don't want to work a psychedelic rock album. I just didn't want to be like, there's no singles. It's one kind of feeling
yeah.
the whole way through that I just want to drop at some point. You know what I mean? Instead of being like, because everyone's going to be like, well, what's the single? I'm like, yo, just let it. Do you know what I'm saying? Just like, let it be. And we were just fully.
That's
just
awesome. Like, truth be told, we're putting out a 33-song album, which is what we've been talking about when you came on. Truth be told, before we made that album, we made a psychedelic record that's actually in the box set. So if you get the box set of the Autumn album, there's 10 more songs, which is volume 3 of the Shiny series. So we made psychedelic records at the same time. So it must have been in the air.
Yeah, dude, it's so funny. It's just like, before I made this last one, I have this full, almost like, Smile, Brian Wilson inspired album.
Ah, very good.
You know what I mean? Which is like weird for me, but I look like I had this Smile bag that I hung above our desk that would just like be like Go Crazy or everything like that. The Roses or Sergeant Pepper or, you know what I mean? Everything that was like, that was what I was listening to, and I just wanted to make that one feeling, one idea. I'm playing the drums on it too. It's like, it sounds like garbage, but it's brilliantly, you know what I mean? It's just like, what the hell? It's like, it's about a feeling, you know what I mean?
But remember, a lot of those songs, a lot of those 60 songs were done in 3 hours. The Beatles, 3-4 hours. They would go in for the afternoon, they'd cut the track and leave. So a lot of stuff that we're still listening to on satellite radio that sounds like magic, it was magic. They made it literally in one afternoon.
That's what I'm saying. The musicianship's amazing, but the way it's recorded isn't. But that's kind of got a charm to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A beauty to it. It's like, listen to the Kinks. You're like, wow, I want it to sound like that. And everyone's like, well, let's record everything through an SM7B then. You know what I mean? Like, literally, let's just like put that at the other side of the room and just record that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, that album could be dropping any moment, ladies and gentlemen, but Youngblood's self-titled album is out right now. And as you're listening to this, you are scheduled to perform this Saturday at the Aftershock Music Festival in Sacramento. And Kyle, I know there's so much more that we could talk about.
Also, Austin City Limits, Austin, Texas on 10/14. I mean, I'm going to tell you this much. Tissues is going to be a massive hit. I don't know much about much, but I'm hearing that. If I'm liking that, other people are going to like it too. It crosses the thing.
It's pretty crazy. It's going pretty crazy at the minute.
And also, I got to tell you, this has been a pleasure chatting with you. You've made a fan of me, and I hope the listeners at home also, if they weren't used to you in any aspect, are now going to be following you, because you've got a bright future ahead of you, and you've got a good head on your shoulders, and you've given me faith in the future of the world.
Well, I want to make sure I got your Instagram right. Kyle hasn't seen a UFO yet, so he feels left out. That's really what this is leading towards.
You guys are just cooler than me.
Listen,
you have life
just
experience.
Go drop mushrooms in Mexico. You'll see something weird, and just say that.
It's happening. 40th birthday, January. Thank you for the idea right there. Instagram, Youngblood, is how they get down there. TikTok.com, @Youngblood. Anything else that you need to be plugging right now that we might have missed?
No, I think you, I mean, Kyle, I should just slide you $20. You did a great job.
Oh, thank you so much. I will take that $20.
We got to get you. And by the way, as long as we're talking to you, we got to get you on NWA Power, our wrestling show. You would be perfect for NWA Power.
Oh, dude, so I love it.
We'll get you up to speed on wrestling.
Dude, I'm down. And next time I'm in Chicago, we should get a coffee or a pint or something.
Sounds good. Anytime. Blessings to you.
Thank you, Youngblood. As for us here at 33, new episodes drop every Tuesday. Use the hashtag WPC33. Spell that out. And then you can follow Joe Galli on Instagram at Joe Galli and Twitter at Joe Galli News. I'm online as Kyle Davis, ATL. And most importantly, Billy Corgan is on Twitter at Billy and Instagram at WPC Codex and SmashingPumpkins.com, obviously, for merch and tour dates coming up. Make sure you like, subscribe, share, rate, and review the podcast wherever you're listening via iTunes, Spotify, iHeart app, or wherever you get your podcast. And this results in algorithms and things beyond my understanding helping us bring more smashing content to the world at large. And if you are still not satiated, make sure to go over to WPC33.com to continue the conversation where you'll find playlists, lyrics, and more on the influences that make the Smashing Pumpkins music you love. Until next time, this has been 33. Billy and Joe, got anything else for the fans?
I love Joe.
I love you all.
I love Youngblood. I love you, Kyle. Oh.
I love this.
Another big thank you to Youngblood for coming out here on this episode of 33. We'll see you all next week.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-lunch pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Set sail and save right away when you book your next Disney cruise vacation with UndercoverTourist.com. Undercover Tourist is your secret for savings on all Disney Resorts vacations. And now, fun in the sun with Disney Cruise Lines. How about enchanting entertainment or an exclusive visit to Castaway Key? Anything's possible aboard a Disney cruise vacation. Book now with UndercoverTourist.com, an authorized seller, and get a free in-room decor package with your Disney Cruise Line booking. Plus, exclusive savings at checkout. UndercoverTourist.com.